This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents The Slow Regard of Silent Things, written and read by Patrick Rothfuss. For Vi, without whom there might be no story, and Tunnel Bob, without whom there would be no Ari. Forward. You might not want to buy this audiobook. I know that's not the sort of thing an author is supposed to say. The marketing people aren't going to like this, and my editor is going to have a fit. But I'd rather be honest with you right out of the gate. First, if you haven't listened to my other books, you really don't want to start here. My first two books are The Name of the Wind and The Wise Man's Fear. If you're curious to try my writing, start there. They're the best introduction to my world. This book deals with Ari, one of the characters from that series. And without the context of those books, you're probably going to feel pretty lost. Second, even if you have read or listened to my other books, I think it's only fair to warn you that this is a bit of a strange story. I don't go in for spoilers, but suffice to say that this one is different. It doesn't do a lot of the things a classic story is supposed to do. And if you're looking for a continuation of Kvothe's storyline, you're not going to find it here. On the other hand, if you'd like to learn more about Ari, this story has a lot to offer. If you love words and mysteries and secrets, if you're curious about the Underthing and alchemy, if you want to know more about the hidden turnings of my world, well, then this audiobook might be for you.
The Far Below Bottom of Things. When Ari woke, she knew that she had 7 days. Yes, she was quite sure of it. He would come for a visit on the 7th day. A long time, long for waiting, but not so long for everything that needed to be done. Not if she were careful, not if she wanted to be ready. Opening her eyes, Ari saw a whisper of dim light, a rare thing, as she was tucked tidily away in mantle, her privatest of places. It was a white day then, a deep day, a finding day. She smiled, excitement fizzing in her chest. There was just enough light to see the pale shape of her arm as her fingers found the dropper bottle on her bedshelf. She unscrewed it and let a single drip fall onto Foxen's dish. After a moment, he slowly brightened into a faint, gloaming blue. Moving carefully, Ari pushed back her blanket so it wouldn't touch the floor. She slipped out of bed, the stone floor warm beneath her feet. Her basin rested on the table near her bed, next to a sliver of her sweetest soap. None of it had changed in the night. That was good. Ari squeezed another drop directly onto Foxen. She hesitated, then grinned and let a third drop fall. No half measures on a finding day. She gathered up her blanket then, folding and folding it up, carefully tucking it under her chin to keep it from brushing against the floor. Foxen's light continued to swell. First, the merest flickering, a fleck, a distant star. Then more of him began to iridesce, a firefly's worth. Still more, his brightness grew till he was all over tremulent with shine. Then he sat proudly in his dish, looking like a blue-green ember slightly larger than a coin. She smiled at him while he roused himself the rest of the way, and he filled all of mantle with his truest, brightest, blue-white light. Then Ari looked around. She saw her perfect bed, just her size, just so. She checked her sitting chair, her cedar box, her tiny silver cup. The fireplace was empty, and above that was the mantelpiece, her yellow leaf, her box of stone, her gray glass jar with sweet dried lavender inside. Nothing was nothing else. Nothing was anything it shouldn't be. There were 3 ways out of mantle. There was a hallway and a doorway and a door. The last of these was not for her. Ari took the doorway into port. Foxen was still resting in his dish, so his light was dimmer here, but it was still bright enough to see. Port had not been very busy of late, but even so, Ari checked on everything in turn. In the wine rack rested half a broken plate of porcelain, no thicker than the petal of a flower. Below that was a leather octavo book, a pair of corks, a tiny ball of twine. Off to one side, his fine white teacup waited for him with a patience Ari envied. On the wall shelf sat a blob of yellow resin in a dish, a black rock, a gray stone, a smooth, flat piece of wood. Apart from all the rest, a tiny bottle stood, its wire bale open like a hungry bird. On the central table, a handful of holly berries rested on a clean white cloth. Ari eyed them for a moment, then took them to the bookshelf, a perch they were more suited to. She looked around the room and nodded to herself, all good. Back in Mantle, Ari washed her face and hands and feet. She slipped out of her nightshirt and folded it into her cedar box. She stretched happily, lifting up her arms and rolling high onto her toes. Then she ducked into her favorite dress, the one he'd given her. It was sweet against her skin. Her name was burning like a fire inside her. Today was going to be a busy day. Ari gathered up Foxen, carrying him cupped in the palm of her hand. She made her way through port, slipping through a jagged crack in the wall. It was not a wide crack, but Ari was so slight she barely needed to turn her shoulders to keep from brushing up against the broken stones. It was nothing like a tight fit. Van was a tall room with straight white walls of fitted stone. It was an echo-empty place, save for her standing mirror. But today there was one other thing, the gentlest breath of sunlight. It snuck in through the peak of an arched doorway filled with rubble, broken timber, blocks of fallen stone, but there, at the very top, a smudge of light. Ari stood in front of the mirror and took the bristlebrush from where it hung on the mirror's wooden frame. She brushed the sleep snarl from her hair until it hung about her like a cloud. She closed her hand over Foxen, and without his blue-green shine, the room went dark as dark. Then her eyes stretched wide, and she could see nothing but the soft, faint smudge of warm light spilling past the rubble high behind her. Pale golden light caught in her pale golden hair. Ari grinned at herself in the mirror. She looked like the sun. Lifting her hand, she uncovered Foxen and skipped quickly off into the sprawling maze of rubric. It was barely a minute's work to find a copper pipe with the right kind of cloth wrapping. But finding the perfect place, well, that was the trick, wasn't it? She followed the pipe through the round red brick tunnels for nearly half a mile, careful not to let it slip away from her among the countless other twining pipes. Then, with no hint of warning, the pipe kinked hard and dove straight into the curving wall, abandoning her. Rude thing. There were countless other pipes, of course, but the tiny tin ones had no wrap at all. The icy ones of burnished steel were far too new. The iron pipes were so eager as to be almost embarrassing, but their wrappings were all cotton, and that was more trouble than she cared to bother with today. So Ari followed a fat ceramic pipe as it bumbled along. Eventually it burrowed deep into the ground, but where it bent, its linen wrap hung loose and ragged as an urchin's shirt. Ari smiled and unwound the strip of cloth with gentle fingers, taking great care not to tear it. Eventually it came away, a perfect thing, a single gauzy piece of graying linen, long as Ari's arm. It was tired but willing, and after folding it upon itself, she turned and pelted madly off through echoing umbral, then down and down into the 12. The 12 was one of the rare changing places of the underthing. It was wise enough to know itself, and brave enough to be itself, and wild enough to change itself while somehow staying altogether true. It was nearly unique in this regard, and while it was not always safe or kind, Ari could not help but feel a fondness for it. Today the high arch of space was just as she'd expected, bright and lively. Sunlight speared down through the open gratings far above, striking down into the deep, narrow valley of the changing place. The light filtered past pipes, support beams, and the strong straight line of an ancient wooden walkway. The distant noise of the street drifted down to the far below bottom of things. Ari heard the sound of hooves on cobblestones, sharp and round as a cracking knuckle. She heard the distant thunder of a passing wagon and the dim mingle of voices. Threading through it all was the high, angry cry of a babe who clearly wanted tit and wasn't getting any. At the bottom of the yellow 12, there was a long, deep pool with water smooth as glass. The sunlight from above was bright enough that Ari could see all the way down to the second snarl of pipes beneath the surface. She already had straw here, and three bottles waited on a narrow ledge of stone along one wall. But looking at them, Ari frowned. There was a green one, a brown one, and a clear one. There was a wide wire baling top, a gray twisting lid, and a cork fat as a fist. They were all different shapes and sizes, but none of them were quite right. Exasperated, Ari threw her hands into the air. So she ran back to Mantle, her bare feet slapping on the stone. Once there, she eyed the gray glass bottle with the lavender inside. She picked it up, looked it over carefully, then sat it back down in its proper place before she scampered out again. Ari hurried through port, heading out by way of the slanting doorway this time, rather than the crack in the wall. She twisted up through Withy, Foxen throwing wild shadows on the walls. As she ran, her hair streamed out behind her like a banner. She took the spiraling stairs through Dark House, down and around, down and around. When she finally heard moving water and the tink of glass, she knew she'd crossed the threshold into Clink's. Soon Foxen's light reflected off the roiling pool of black water that swallowed the bottom of the spiraling stairs. There were two bottles perched in a shallow niche there, one blue and narrow, one green and squat. Ari tilted her head and closed one eye, then reached out to touch the green one with two fingers. She grinned, snatched it up, and ran back up the stairs. Heading back, she went through vaults for a change of air. Running down the hall, she sprang over the first deep fissure in the broken floor as lithely as a dancer. The second crack, she leapt as lightly as a bird. The third, she jumped as wildly as a pretty girl who looked just like the sun. She came into the yellow 12 all puffed and panting. As she caught her breath, she tucked Foxen in the green bottle, patted him carefully with straw, and locked down the hasp against the rubber gasket, sealing the lid down tight. She held it up to her face, then grinned and kissed the bottle before setting it carefully by the edge of the pool. Ari shucked off her favorite dress and hung it on a bright brass pipe. She grinned and shivered a little, nervous fish swimming in her stomach. Then, standing in her all together, she gathered up her floating hair with both her hands. She brushed it back and bound it, winding and tying it behind her with a strip of old gray linen cloth. When she was done, it made a long tail that hung down to the small of her back. Arms held close against her chest, Ari took two tiny steps to stand beside the pool. She dipped a toe in the water, then her whole foot. She grinned at the feel of it, chill and sweet as peppermint. Then she lowered herself down, both legs dangling in the water. Ari balanced for a moment, holding her naked self up with both hands, away from the cold stone lip at the edge of the pool. But there was no avoiding it, so Ari puckered up and settled herself the rest of the way down. There was nothing peppermint about the cold stone edge. It was a dull, blunt bite against her tender, altogether hindmost self. She turned around then and began to lower herself into the water. She went slowly, tickling around with her feet until she found the tiny jut of stone. She curled her toes around it, holding herself thigh-deep in the pool. Then she drew a few deep breaths, screwed her eyes shut, and bared her teeth before letting go with her toes and ducking her nethers underneath the surface. She squeaked a little, and the chill made her whole self go goose-prickle. The worst over, she closed her eyes and dunked her head beneath the water, too. Gasping and blinking, she rubbed the water out of her eyes. She had her big all-over shiver then, one arm folded across her breasts. But by the time it was done, her grimace had turned to grin. Without her halo of hair, Ari felt small. Not the smallness that she strove for every day. Not the smallness of a tree among trees, of a shadow underground. And not just small of body, either. She knew there was not much of her. When she thought to look more closely at her standing mirror, the girl she saw was tiny as an urchin begging on the street. The girl she saw was thin as thin, her cheekbones high and delicate, her collarbones pressed tight against her skin. But no, with her hair pulled back and wetted down besides, she felt less. She felt tamped down, dim, more faint, faint, feigned, fain. It would have been pure unpleasant without the perfect strip of linen. If not for that, she wouldn't merely feel like a wick rolled down. She would be downright guttery. It was worth it doing things the proper way. Finally, the last of her trembling stopped. The fish were still turning in her stomach, but her grin was eager. The golden daylight from above struck down into the pool, straight and bright and steady as a spear. Ari drew a deep breath, then pushed it out, wriggling her toes. She took another deep breath and let it out more slowly. Then a third breath. Ari gripped the neck of Foxen's bottle in one hand, let go of the stone edge of the pool, and dove beneath the water. The angle of the light was perfect, and Ari saw the first pipe tangle clear as anything. Minnow quick, she turned and glided smoothly through, not letting any of them touch her. Below that was the second snarl. She pushed an old iron pipe with her foot to keep herself moving downward, then tugged a valve with her free hand as she went past, changing speed and sliding through the narrow space between two wrist-thick copper pipes. The spearlight faded as she sank, leaving only Foxen's blue-green glow. But his light was muted here, filtered through straw and water and the thick green glass. Ari made her mouth a perfect O and puffed out two quick bursts of bubbles. The pressure grew as she went deeper, shapes looming dimly by her in the dark. An old walkway, a tilting slab of rock, an ancient algae-covered wooden beam. Her outstretched fingers found the bottom sooner than her eyes, and Ari swept her hand across the half-seen surface of the smooth stone floor. Back and forth, quick but wary. Sometimes there were sharp things here. Then her fingers closed on something long and smooth. A stick? She tucked it underneath her arm and let herself begin to float back up towards the distant light. Her free hand found familiar pipes, pulling and steering, twisting through the maze of half-seen shapes. Her lungs began to ache a bit, and she released a stream of bubbles as she rose. Her face broke the surface near the edge, and in the golden light she saw what she had found, a clean white bone. Long, but not a leg, an arm, the prima axial. She ran her fingers down the length of it and felt a tiny seam that ran all around it like a ring, showing it had broken and long healed. It was full of pleasant shadows. Smiling, Ari set it aside. Then she drew three slow, deep breaths, gripped Foxen tight, and dove into the pool again. This time she got her foot wedged tight between two pipes around the second tangle. Bad luck. She scowled and tugged, and after half a moment managed to pull free. She blew half her lungful out and kicked hard, dropping like a stone down into the black below. Despite the bad start, this was an easy catch. Her fingers found a tangle of something or other before they even touched the bottom. She had no guess what it might be, something metal, something slick, and something hard all jumbled up together. She gathered it close to her chest and started up again. This time she couldn't tuck her find beneath her arm for fear she'd lose some piece of it. So Ari nestled Foxen's bottle in the crook of her arm and pulled herself along with her left hand. It felt good, balanced, and she broke the surface not even needing to blow the rest of her bubbles. She spread the tangle out by the edge of the pool. an old belt with a silver buckle so tarnished it was black as coal, a leafy branch with a bewildered snail, and lastly but not least, looped on a piece of rotten string all tangled with the branch, was a slender key as long as her first finger. Ari kissed the snail and apologized before setting the branch back in the water where it belonged. The leather of the belt was turned against itself, but at the slightest tug the buckle came away. Both of them were better off that way. Clinging to the stone edge of the pool, Ari shivered now in tiny waves. They moved across her shoulders and her chest. Her lips had gone from pink to pale pink tinged with blue. She picked up Foxen's bottle and checked the bale to make sure it was tight. She looked down into the water, the fish in her stomach swimming excitedly. Third time was the lucky one. Ari pulled a breath and dove again, her body twisting smoothly, her right hand finding all the friendly grips, down to the dark, the stone, the timber, then nothing but dim Foxen's light, coloring her outstretched hand a pale blue-green. It looked the way a water nixie's must. Her knuckles brushed the bottom, and she spun a bit to orient herself. She kicked and swept her hand about, skimming smoothly out along the black stone bottom of the pool. Then she saw a glint of light, and her fingers bumped something solid and cold, all hard lines and smooth. It was full of love and answers, so full she felt them spilling out at just her briefest touch. For the space of 10 hard heartbeats, Ari thought it must be fastened to the stone. Then it slid and she realized the truth. It was a weighty thing. After a long, slippery moment, her tiny fingers found a way to pry it up. It was solid metal, thick as a book. It was oddly shaped and heavy as a bar of raw iridium. Ari brought it to her chest and felt its edges dig into her skin. Then she bent her knees and pushed off hard against the bottom with both feet, looking up toward the distant shimmer of the surface. She kicked and kicked, but barely seemed to move. The metal thing dragged, pulling her down. Her foot bumped hard against a thick iron pipe, and Ari took the chance to brace herself and give another push. She felt a rush of motion up that slowed as soon as her foot left the iron behind. Her lungs were fighting with her now. Half full, the dumb things wanted air. She puffed out a mouthful of bubbles, trying to trick them, knowing every bubble lost would weigh her down, knowing she wasn't even near the bottom tangle yet. Ari tried to shift the metal thing to the crook of her arm so she could pull herself along, but when she tried, the smoothness of it slipped a little in her fingers. In the sudden panic afterward, she clutched, fumbled, and Foxen's bottle knocked against some unseen shape. He slid and jostled free of Ari's grip. Ari snatched with her free hand, but her knuckles only batted Foxen farther off away, and for a moment Ari froze. To let the metal drop would be unthinkable, but Foxen, he had been with her forever. She watched as Foxen's bottle was caught by an eddy and swirled well out of reach behind a trio of slanting copper pipes. Her lungs were angry now. She clenched her teeth and grabbed a nearby lip of stone with her now free hand, pulling herself up. Her lungs were heaving hard inside her now, so she slowly loosed her bubbles, though she hadn't even glimpsed the lowest tangle yet. It was dark without Foxen, but at least she was moving, pulling herself up in sudden awkward jerks, using whatever strange handhold she could find. She kicked, but there was little to be gained from that, burdened as she was with the heavy lump of sharp, hard love she held so tightly to her chest. Was it the answers that it held that gave it so much weight? Finally, she dragged herself into the lower nest of pipes, but her lungs were empty now, and her body hung like lead. Normally, she twisted through the tangle like a fish, her body never brushing the pipes. But she was heavy and empty. One-handed, she groped and bucked her way through them. She banged her knee and frantically slid her back along something sharp with rust. She stretched out an arm, but heavy as she was, her fingers didn't even brush her usual handhold. She kicked, gained another inch or two, then, despite her careful binding, her hair snagged on something. It jerked her to a sudden stop, snapping her head back and spinning her body sideways in the water. Almost immediately, she felt herself begin to sink. She flailed out wildly. Her shin struck a pipe, making her whole self tingle with pain. But she quickly sought it out with her other foot, braced and shoved off hard. She shot up like a cork, fast enough so that her hair tore free from whatever rude thing had caught it. The sharp tug snapped her head back hard, forcing her mouth open. She began to drown then. Mouth full of water, she choked and gagged. But even as the water filled her nose and throat, Ari feared nothing so much as the thought her hand might slip, that she would lose her grip and let the heavy jag of metal slide away into the dark. Losing Foxen was bad. It would leave her blind and lonely in the dark. Being trapped beneath the pipes and choking out her life was awful too, but neither of those things were wrong. Letting the metal slide into the dark simply could not be done. It was unthinkable. It was so unkilter that it terrified her. Her hair was unbound now, and it swirled around her in the water like a cloud of smoke. Her hand grabbed a curve of pipe, comforting, familiar. She pulled herself up, then grabbed again and found another grip. She clenched her teeth, choked, pulled, and grabbed. She broke the surface, gasping and spluttering, then slid under the water again. A second later, she claw-clambered her way up again. This time, her free hand caught the stone edge of the pool. Ari heaved the thing out of the water, and it struck the stone floor with the sound of a bell. It was a bright brass gear, big as a platter, thicker than her thumb with some to spare. It had a hole in the middle, 9 teeth and a jagged gap where a tenth had long ago been torn away. It was full of true answers and love and hearthlight. It was beautiful. Ari smiled and heaved up half a stomach full of water on the stones, then heaved again, turning her head so that it didn't splash against the bright brass gear. She coughed then, took a mouthful of water and spat it back into the pool. The brass gear lay heavy as a heart on the cold stones of the Yellow 12. The light from up above made the surface of it shimmerant and gold. It looked like a piece of sun she'd brought up from the deep. Ari coughed again and shivered. Then she reached out and touched it with one finger. She smiled to look at it. Her lips were blue. She trembled. Her heart was full of joy. After she pulled herself out of the water, Ari looked around the pool at the bottom of the 12. Though she knew better, some part of her hoped to see Foxen bobbing idly on the surface. Nothing. Her face was solemn then. She thought of going back, but no, 3 times. That was the way of things. But the thought of leaving Foxen in the dark was enough to put a fine, thin crack straight through her heart. To lose him after all this time... Then Ari caught a glimpse of something deep below the surface. A glint, a glow. She grinned. Foxen looked for all the world like a great bumbrous firefly as he bobbled and bumped his slow way slowly up through all the tangled pipes. She waited 5 long minutes, watching Foxen's bottle bob and drift until it finally popped up to the surface like a duck. Then she caught it up and kissed it. She held it to her chest. Oh, yes, it was well worth it, doing things the proper way. First things first, Ari freed Foxen from the bottle and set it next to the others on the wall. Then she headed down to Clink's and rinsed herself in the roiling water there. Then she washed herself, using up the slender remnant of a cake of soap that smelled of sinus fruit and summer. After soaping and scrubbing and cleaning her hair, Ari dove into the endless black water of Clink's to rinse herself one final time. Under the surface, something brushed against her. Something slick and heavy pressed its moving weight against her leg. It did not bother her. Whatever it was in its proper place, and so was she. Things were just as they should be. Dripping clean and wringing out her hair, Ari headed off through Tenors. Not the quickest way, but it would be unseemly to head through Dunning's in nothing but her pinkness. But even taking the longer way, it wasn't long before she turned the corner into Baker's, wet feet slapping on the stone. She rested Foxen on a piece of jutting brick nearby, as he wasn't fond of too much heat. The thick steel pipes along the tunnel's wall were too hot to stand near today, and the walls and floor had been basking until they too were all crickly with heat. Ari spun in a slow circle to keep any part of her tender altogether from getting roasted by the silent red roar pouring off the pipes. It was only moments before the place had dried her skin, set her fine hair floating, and cooked the shivers from her icy bones. After that, she fetched her favorite dress from the Yellow 12. She slid it over her head, then carried all her treasures back to port, where she arranged them on the central table. The leather belt was etched in odd curling patterns. The great brass gear was bright straight through. The key was black as black. The buckle, though, it was black with bright beneath. It was a hidden thing. Might the buckle be for him? That would be a good beginning to the day, a nice thing to have settled early on, his gift all ready with his visit days away. Ari eyed the buckle sharply. Was it a proper gift for him? He was a tangled sort. And he was much hidden, too. Nodding, she reached out to touch the cool, dark metal. But no, it didn't suit him. She should have known. He was not a one for fastening, for holding closed. Neither was he dark. Oh, no, he was emberant, incarnadine. He was bright with better bright beneath, like copper-gilded gold. The gear would need consideration. It almost felt like it could be for him, but that could wait. The key needed urgent tending. It was for certain the most restless of the lot. This wasn't even a slim sliver of surprise. Keys were hardly known for their complacency, and this one was near howling for a lock. Ari picked it up and turned it in her hands. A door key. It wasn't shy about the fact at all. Black key. White day. She cocked her head. The shape of things was right. It was a finding day, and there was no doubt the poor thing badly wanted tending. She nodded to herself and slipped the key into the pocket of her dress. Even so, before she left, Ari helped everything to find its proper place. The belt stayed on the central table, obviously. The buckle moved to rest beside the dish of resin. The bone nestled almost indecently close to the hollyberry. The gear was troublesome in this regard. She set it on the bookshelf, then moved it to the table in the corner. It leaned against the wall, the gap from its lost tooth pointing up into the air. Ari frowned. It wasn't quite the proper place. Ari brought out the key and held it in front of the gear. Black and brass, both for turning. They had 12 teeth between them. She shook her head and sighed. She put the key back into her pocket and left the great brass gear on the bookshelf. It wasn't the proper place for it, but it was the best that she could do for now. Burrow was closest, so Ari hurried there, ducking her head through the low stone doorways until she came to the first of its doors. Standing there, Ari cupped Foxen in her palm and huffed a gentle breath onto him, fanning his light. The wooden door was huge and gray with age, its hinges hardly more than flaking rust. She drew the key out of her pocket and held it out in front of her, between herself and the great gray door. She looked back and forth between them, then turned and padded away. Three left turns and through a broken window to the second door, also old and gray, but larger than the first. Here she barely needed to glance at them before she knew the truth. This wasn't right. These weren't the proper doors. Where, then? Tenors? Black door? She shivered. Not Black Door. Not on a white day. Wayne's instead. Then Tenors. Even through Bottom. This was not a key for Black Door. No. Ari hurried through rubric, turning left twice and right twice for balance, making sure never to follow any of the pipes too far lest she offend. Next came Greeley, with its twisting ways and its sulfurant smell. She got a little lost there among the crumbling walls, but eventually made her right way to Crumbledon, a narrow dirt tunnel so steep it was little more than a hole. Ari scampered down on a long ladder made of lashed-together sticks. The bottom of the ladder dropped into a tiny, tidy room of finished stone. It was no bigger than a closet, empty except for an old oak door all bound in brass. Ari brushed off her hands, swung the door open, and stepped lightly into Wayne's. The hallway was wide enough to drive a wagon through, high-ceilinged and long enough that Foxen's light could barely reach the tangle of debris that blocked the far end. Above her, blue-white light scattered off a crystal chandelier. Dark wood paneling hugged the lower portion of the walls, but above that was ornate plasterwork. There were broad frescoes decorating the ceiling. Women in gauze lounged about, whispering and rubbing oil on each other. Men frolicked about in the water, flapping around ridiculously in their absolute altogether. Ari took a moment to look at the pictures, as she always did, grinning wickedly. She shifted her weight from side to side, the polished marble floor chill beneath her tiny feet. Both ends of Wayne's were blocked by fallen rock and earth, but in the middle it was clean as a crucible. Everything dry and tight as you please, no damp, no mold, no drafts to bring in dust. Altogether, men or no, it was a seemly place, so Ari was careful to comport herself with full decorum. There were 12 oak doors lining the hall, all fine and tight and bound in brass. Over her long years in the underthing, Ari had opened 3 of them. She walked down the hall, Foxen glowing brightly in her upheld hand. After a dozen steps, a glimmer on the marble floor caught her eye. Skipping close, she saw a crystal had fallen from the chandelier to lay unbroken on the floor. It was a lucky thing, and brave. She picked it up and put it in the pocket that didn't have the key inside. They would only fuss if they were put together. It wasn't the 3rd door, or the 7th. Ari was already planning her route down to Throughbottom when she spied the 9th door. It was waiting, eager. The latch turned and the door eased smoothly open on silent hinges. Ari stepped inside, pulled the key from her pocket, and kissed it before she lay it carefully on an empty table just inside the door. The tiny tap as it touched the wood warmed her heart. She smiled to see it sitting there, all snug and in its proper place. It was a sitting room, very fine. Ari sat Foxen in a wall sconce and went to have a careful look around. A tall velvet chair, a low wooden table, a plush couch on a plush carpet. In the corner was a tiny cart filled with glasses and bottles. They were very dignified. There was something wrong with the room. Nothing looming, nothing like in Sit Twice or Faceling. No, this was a good place, a nearly perfect place. Everything was almost. If this hadn't been a white day with everything done properly, she might not have been able to tell something was amiss. Still, it was, and she did. Ari stepped around the room, hands clasped primly behind her back. She eyed the cart, more than a dozen bottles, all colors, some stoppered and full, some holding little more than dust. There was a burnished silver gear watch on one of the tables near the couch. There was a ring, too, and a scattering of coins. Ari eyed them curiously, touching nothing. She moved daintily, one step, another. The dark plush of the carpet was sweet beneath her feet, like moss, and when she bent down to run her fingers over the hush of it, she glimpsed a tiny whiteness underneath the couch. She reached deep into the shadows with a small white hand, having to stretch a bit before her fingers caught it, smooth and cool. It was a tiny figurine carved from a piece of pale, retiring stone. a small soldier with clever lines to show his hauberk and his shield. But his truest treasure was the sweetness of his face, kind enough for kissing. It didn't belong here, but it wasn't wrong. Or rather, it wasn't what was wrong with the room. The poor thing was simply lost. Ari smiled and put the doll in her pocket with the crystal. It was then that she felt a tiny bump beneath one foot. She pulled up the edge of the carpet, rolled it back, and found a small bone button underneath. Ari eyed it for a long moment before giving it an understanding smile. That wasn't it either. The button was just as it should be. Moving carefully, she lay the carpet back exactly as she'd found it, patting it into place with her hands. She looked around the room again. It was a good place, and almost entirely as it ought to be. There wasn't really anything for her to do here. It was startling, really, as the place had obviously been alone for ages without anyone tending to it. Even so, there was something wrong, some lack, some tiny thing, like a single cricket legging madly in the night. A second door sat on the other side of the room, eager to be opened. She worked the latch, walked through a hallway, only to come to the foot of a set of stairs. There she looked around with some surprise. She thought that she was still in Wayne's, but clearly not. This was a different place entirely. Ari's heart beat faster then. It had been ages since she'd come on somewhere wholly new, a place that dared to be entirely itself. Still, carefully. In Foxen's steady light, Ari looked closely at the walls and ceiling. A few cracks, but nothing thicker than a thumb. A few small stones had fallen, and there was dirt and mortar on the steps as well. The walls were bare and slightly condescending. No, she had obviously left Wayne's behind. She ran a hand over the stones of the steps. The first few were solid, but the fourth was loose, as were the sixth and seventh, and the tenth. There was a landing halfway up where the stairway turned back upon itself. There was a door, but it was terribly bashful, so Ari politely pretended not to see it. She made her careful way up the second flight of steps, and found half of them were also loose or prone to tipping. Then she went back down the stairs, making sure she'd found all the shifting stones. She hadn't. It was terribly exciting. The place was tricky as a drunken tinker, and a little sly. It had a temper, too. It would be hard to find a place less like a garden path. Some places had names. Some places changed, or they were shy about their names. Some places had no names at all, and that was always sad. It was one thing to be private, but to have no name at all? How horrible. How lonely. Ari made her way up the stairs a second time, testing each one with her feet, avoiding the spots she knew were bad. As she climbed, she couldn't tell what sort of place this was. Shy or secret, lost or lonely. A puzzling place. It made her grin all the wider. At the top of the stairs, the ceiling had collapsed, but there was a gap made by a broken wall. Ari stepped through and found herself grinning with the thrill of it. Another new place, two in one day. Her bare feet shifted back and forth on the gritty stone floor, almost dancing with excitement. This place was not so coy as the stairway. Its name was Tumbrel. It was scattered and half fallen and half full. There was so much to see. Half the ceiling had fallen in, and everything was covered in dust. But for all its fallen stone, it was dry and tight. No damp, just dust and stiff air. More than half the room was a solid mass of fallen earth and stone and timber. The remnants of a four-post bed lay crushed beneath the wreckage. In the unfallen portion of the room, there was a triune mirror vanity and a dark wooden wardrobe taller than a tall woman standing on her toes. Ari peered shyly through the wardrobe's half-open doors. She glimpsed a dozen dresses there, all velvet and embroidery, shoes, a robe of silk, some gauzy bits of the sort the women wore in the frescoes down in Wayne's. The vanity was a rakish thing, garrulous and unashamed. The top was scattered with pots of powders, small brushes, sticks of eye paint, bracelets and rings, combs of horn and ivory and wood. There were pins and pens and a dozen bottles, some substantial, some delicate as petals. It was in startling disarray. Everything resting atop the vanity was somehow askew. Powders were spilled, bottles toppled, the dish of pins all higgledy-piggledy. Dishevelled or no, Ari couldn't help but take a liking to the thing, gruff and bawdy as it was. She sat primly on the edge of the straight-backed chair. She ran her fingers through her floating hair and smiled to see herself reflected in a triptych. There was a door, too, opposite the broken wall. It was half buried by a broken beam and blocks of shattered stone. But hidden as it wasn't shy. Ari went to work then, setting things to rights as best she could. She shifted the wooden beam that blocked the door, lifting and straining a few inches at a time until she could lever at it with another piece of fallen timber. Then she cleared away the stones, pushing the one she could not carry, rolling the one she could not push. She found the wreckage of a small table underneath the stones, and amid the splintered wood she found a length of fine white tatted lace. She folded this up carefully and put it in her pocket with the crystal in the small stone soldier. Once the way was clear, the door pulled open easily, its rusted hinges moaning. Inside was a small closet. There was an empty porcelain chamber pot. There was a wooden bucket, a brush of the sort that you would use to scrub the deck of a ship, and a tight birch broom. On the back of the door hung two empty linen sacks. The smaller of these was anxious to be about its business, so Ari smiled and tucked it in a pocket by itself. The broom was eager after being trapped so long, so Ari brought it out and set to sweeping, brushing ancient dust and earth into a tidy pile. After that it was still restless, so Ari went to sweep the unnamed stair as well. She brought Foxen with, of course. She would hardly trust a place like that to behave in the dark. But since a proper birching of the place required two hands, Ari tied Foxen to a long lock of her hanging hair. Foxen's dignity was somewhat bruised by this, and Ari kissed him in sincere apology for the affront. But they both knew he took a certain joy from swinging wildly all about, making the shadows spin and skirl. So for a while, he hung and swung. Ari took care not to notice any undue exuberance on his part while she gave the unnamed stairs a brisk once-over. Up and down, then up again. The tight birch broom flicked and tickled the stone steps clear of fallen rocks and grit and dust. They were flattered by the attention, while remaining entirely coy. After returning the broom to the closet, Ari brought out the chamber pot and set it near the wardrobe. She spun it slightly so it faced the proper way. Charming as it was, the vanity was vexing, too. It seemed all askew, but nothing called out for tidying. The only exception was the hairbrush, which she moved closer to a cunning ruby ring. Ari crossed her arms and stared at the vanity for a long minute. Then she went down on her hands and knees and looked at its underside. She opened the drawers and moved the handkerchiefs from the left-hand drawer into the right, then frowned and moved them back again. Finally, she pushed the entire thing about two handspan to the left and slightly closer to the wall, careful not to let anything tumble to the floor. She slid the vanity's high back chair the same amount so it still faced the mirrors. Then she picked up the chair and examined the bottoms of its feet before putting it back in place with a tiny shrug. There was a loose stone in the floor next to the wardrobe. Ari prized it up with her fingers, adjusted the small leather sack and piece of wool padding underneath, then slid the stone back into place, tamping it down firmly with the handle of the broom. She tested it with one foot and smiled when it no longer shifted under her weight. Lastly, she opened the wardrobe. She moved the dress of burgundy velvet away from the gown of pale blue silk. She replaced the lid of a tall hat box that had come ajar. She opened the drawer at the bottom of the wardrobe. Her breath caught in her chest then. Folded tidily away at the bottom of the drawer were several perfect sheets, pale and smooth. Ari reached down to touch one and was amazed at the tightness of the weave. so fine her fingers couldn't feel the thread. It was cool and sweet to the touch, like a lover come to kiss her, fresh in from the cold. Ari brushed her hand across the surface. How lovely might it be to sleep on such a sheet, to lay on it and feel the sweetness of it all along her naked skin. She shivered, and her fingers curled around the folded edges of the sheet. Hardly realizing what she did, she drew it from its proper place and brought it to her chest. She brushed her lips against its smoothness. There were other sheets beneath it, a treasure trove, surely enough for a place like Tumbril. Besides, she'd set so many other things to rights. Surely... She looked down at the sheet for a long moment, and while her eyes were all softness and want, her mouth grew firm and furious. No, that was not the way of things. She knew better. She knew perfectly well where this sheet belonged. Ari closed her eyes and put the sheet back in the drawer, shame burning in her chest. She was a greedy thing sometimes, wanting for herself, twisting the world all out of proper shape, pushing everything about with the weight of her desire. She closed the drawer and came to her feet. Looking around, she nodded to herself. She'd made a good beginning here. The vanity was obviously in need of some attention, but she couldn't taste the nature of it yet. Still, the place had a name, and everything obvious was tended to. Ari took Foxen and headed down the unnamed stair, through Wayne's and Crumbledon, and all the way back to Mantle. She fetched fresh water. She washed her face and hands and feet. After that, she felt much better. She grinned, and on a whim, she sprinted off to Devling. She hadn't visited in ages and missed the warm earth smell of it, the closeness of the walls. Running lightly on her toes, Ari danced through Rubric, ducking pipes. She skipped through woods, reaching out to swing herself from time-worn beams that held the sagging roof at bay. Finally, she came to a swollen wooden door. Stepping through, she held Foxen high. She smelled the air. She grinned. She knew exactly where she was. Everything was just where it should be. What a Look Entails. The second day, Ari woke to silence in the perfect dark. That meant a turning day, a doing day. Good. There was much to do before he came. She wasn't nearly ready. She roused Foxen and folded up her blanket, careful to keep the corners off the floor. She glanced around the room. Her box and leaf and lavender were fine. Her bed was fine. Everything was just as it should be. There were three ways out of Mantle. The hallway was for later. The doorway was for now. The door was oak, bound in iron. Ari did not look at it. In port, the stone figurine and length of lace had made themselves at home. The brave crystal was content in the wine rack. The arm bone and linen sack were so comfortable you'd think they'd been there for 100 years. The old black buckle was crowding the resin a bit, but that was quickly mended. She nudged it to one side to keep things civilized. She looked around inside. Everything was fine except for the great brass gear. It exasperated her. She picked the crystal up and set it next to the gear, but that didn't help at all, and just upset the crystal. It was brave enough for 10, but it wasn't for the corner table. She gave it a quick kiss by way of apology and returned it to the wine rack. Ari picked up the heavy gear with both hands and brought it into Mantle. It was unheard of, really, but by this point she was at something of a loss. She set it on the narrow ledge of stone on the wall opposite her bed. She tipped it so the empty gap its missing tooth made was straight up toward the ceiling, as if it were reaching upward with its two short, stubby arms. Stepping back, she looked at it and sighed. Better, but even so, it wasn't quite the proper place. Ari washed her face and hands and feet. Her thin sliver of soap smelled of sunlight, and that made her smile. Then she slipped into her second favorite dress, as it had better pockets. It was a turning day, after all. In port, she put her linen gathersack over one shoulder, tucking a few things inside. Then she packed her pockets full as full. Before she left, Ari glanced back into Mantle at the brazen gear. But no, if it had wanted to come, it should have been content to stay in port. Proud thing. In Van, she was startled to find the mirror was unsettled. Anxious, even. Hardly an auspicious start to her day. Still, it was the sort of thing only a fool would willfully ignore. And Ari was no fool. Besides, the mirror had been around for quite a while, so she knew its little ways. It wanted moving, but it needed to be settled first. It needed to be comforted, coaxed. It needed covering. So, despite the fact that she was yet unbrushed, Ari gathered up Foxen and took the long way down to Wayne's, walking slowly to her newly opened door as she eyed the frescoes overhead. She stopped briefly in the sitting room, looking around. The tiny wrongness was still there, like a hint of gristle in her teeth. It wouldn't bother her if everything else here wasn't almost circle perfect. But some things simply can't be rushed. Ari knew this for a fact. Besides, she needed the mirror set to rights before anything else. That meant covering. So she headed up the unnamed stair, her feet skipping back and forth to miss the unsafe stones. Then she headed through the broken wall and into Tumbril. Once there, Ari opened up the wardrobe's drawer. She did not touch the sheets. Instead, her hands went to her pockets. She felt the smooth facets of the brave crystal. No. She touched the curved lines of the kind stone figurine. No. The flat black rock? No. Then her fingers touched the buckle and she smiled. She brought it out and set it gently in the drawer. Then she lifted out the topmost folded sheet. It was smooth and creamy in her hands, pale as ivory. Ari stopped then, looking at the blackness of the buckle in the drawer. There was a stone in her stomach. It didn't belong here. Oh, it seemed sensible. Oh, yes, certainly. But she knew what seeming was worth in the end, didn't she? Reluctantly, she lay the sheet back in the drawer. Her fingers ran over its perfect whiteness, smooth and clean and new. There was a hint of winter in it. But no, there is a difference between the truth and what we wish were true. Sighing, Ari took the buckle back and pushed it deep into her pocket. Leaving the sheet where it was, Ari headed back to Mantle. She moved more slowly now, no skipping. The trip down the unnamed stair cheered her somewhat. Her path staggered drunkenly back and forth as she moved from one safe section to another. A stone turned underneath her feet, and Ari pinwheeled her arms to keep from slipping. She cocked her head to the side, standing balanced on one foot. Was this place Tipple, then? No, it was too sly for that. The mirror was still restless back in Van, and with no better options, Ari was forced to fetch her blanket from her bed. Careful not to let it touch the ground, she draped it over the mirror before turning it to face the wall. Only then could it be moved across the room so that it stood before the bricked-over window where it so desperately wanted to be. She returned her blanket to Mantle and washed her face and hands and feet. Coming back to Van, she saw her time had been well spent. She'd never seen her mirror so content. Grinning at herself, she brushed the elf knots from her hair until it hung around her like a golden cloud. But just as she was finishing, when she lifted up her arms to push her cloud of hair behind her, Ari staggered just a bit, all sudden dizzy. After it passed, she walked slowly to Cricklet and took a long, deep drink. She felt the cool water run all along her insides with nothing to stop it. She felt hollow inside. Her stomach was an empty fist. Her feet wanted to go to Apple Court, but she knew there were no apples left. He wouldn't be waiting there anyway, not until the seventh day. Which was good, really. She had nothing suitable to share, nor nothing halfway good enough to be a proper gift. So she went to Tree instead. Her pans were hanging in their proper places, her spirit lamp just so. The cracked clay cup was sitting quietly. Everything was just as it should be. That said, she had more tools than food in Tree. On the shelves there was the sack of salt he'd given her. There were 4 fat figs swaddled modestly in a sheet of folded paper, a single lonely withered apple, a handful of dried peas sat sadly at the bottom of a clear glass jar. Set into the stone counter was a chill well, running with a slow but constant stream of icy water.